Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston accent.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Headshot, bang!
I think I like Kenny Florian's hat better this week than last. Warner Brothers Discovery. You don't look like a train conductor today.
Kind of. A little bit. No. If I got a little pointy, I got the dad hat going on. Yeah. And it's a little crooked. God, I look like a tool. All right. Well, anyways, I'm giving up hats, John. That's what I'm doing.
Hey, it's great to be here, though, isn't it? It's Wednesday, March 1st. The year is 2023, episode 393 of the Anik and Florian Podcast, presented by DraftKings, where you can find full episodes on the YouTube channel, clips on the AF channel. So I'm here in Las Vegas, embedded in this UFC 285 fight week. I'm about to do the drive of shame from the five-star Encore to the UFC host hotel, New York, New York. So we're about to downgrade here in a little bit, but there are a few things I want to get to with you off the top. We're scheduled to be joined by Louisiana's finest Brendan Allen here after a big main event win in a few minutes. Also pending Marlon Chito Vera later in the show, but he trains a lot. So hopefully the schedules are aligned there. Also, time permitting, we'll get a few thoughts from Ken Flo on Darren Till's release, but this was something that he asked for, so I'm not sure that we need to read too far into that. I'm wearing the Boston Bruins t-shirt today, Patrice Bergeron. The Boston Bruins last night get outshot 57-20, right? And still win the game 4-3 in overtime.
Damn.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
Allmark makes 54 saves for the best outfit in the NHL right now. So here's your Calgary Flames ticket from last night, Ken Flo, from the win, right? Always trying to purchase these victories for the the Boston Bruins. We're always getting involved. Always getting involved.
Classic.
So I'm watching film in advance of UFC 285, and there's a fighter by the name of Loic Rajabov who is going to make his UFC debut. He fought Haush Manfio under the PFL banner for $1 million not all that long ago. And I got to say, and I know this, I wrote this to you privately, to which you responded, it's all a blur, and I'm with you on that. It's all a blur. But what an outstanding call by you and Sean O'Connell and Randy Couture. Outstanding 25-minute call. Great championship call, Kenny.
Thank you, dude. Thank you, dude. Hey, listen, Loic is a beast, man. He is as tough as they come. One thing's for sure, he's going to be exciting to watch. And keep an eye out on him for sure.
So he makes his UFC debut. I think actually he was going to be on The Ultimate Fighter, but he ends up making his UFC debut out of Tajikistan, where they really support MMA, which is very exciting. So we'll see how it goes. Trains under Henry Hooft. And speaking of which, we're very happy to now be joined by a man who is all the rage at present, and rightfully so, back home in Louisiana with his girls, I do believe. The now number 12 ranked UFC middleweight contender, Brendan All In Allen. Great to see you, brother. Welcome home. How are you?
What's up, brother? I'm good. Hey, number 11. I don't care what those say. The number 11.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I looked it up this morning. I'm trying to do my homework. But, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you beat Andre Muniz, however you want to pronounce it, and you submit him no less. So Kenny Florian picked you at plus 155. He was very excited to see you cash there, buddy. So congratulations, man. You've won four in a row. I actually had the chance to congratulate you at the airport as we sort of passed as you were headed back to South Florida. How long is that drive, by the way, South Florida to Louisiana?
It takes me like 11 hours.
Yeah.
But man, I left at like 2 a.m. I woke up, I slept from like 11 to like 1:30. I was like, man, I'm not going back to sleep. I was like, screw this. I'm just started driving home.
Get on the road. See those girls. Yeah. And I'd imagine, you know, I drove 10 hours from Atlanta to South Florida after the Patriots won a Super Bowl. And I'm not necessarily trying to compare that adrenaline rush or that positivity to winning a mixed martial arts fight, right? But I'd imagine after a win, that 11-hour drive is not a huge problem.
You know, so it's kind of funny. When I fought Carl Robertson in Jacksonville, the first event back from COVID, I literally finished the fight, went back to the hotel because I drove from South Florida to Jacksonville. I went back to the hotel. I showered. I watched, you know, when Chris Weidman broke his leg with Uriah Hall. Oh. And I literally got in the truck and drove, I think it was 8.5, 9 hours. I think it was 8.5 all the way home. I got back at like 6 a.m. I wasn't tired or nothing the whole time. I was just, well, I was literally driving. I don't advise this, but I was driving and watching the replay of the fight the whole time.
There's something about a fight though. Like if you win, you're just, you know, just kind of jacked up on adrenaline and excitement and all that stuff, right? And then if you lose, for me, I wouldn't sleep either because that'd be just like replaying it in my head, like, what the hell did I do wrong, you know? So yeah, it's a weird feeling after a fight, man. You definitely have a lot of energy either way.
Yeah, so man, you get, same way.
So you get the bonus, you get your 21st professional win. How old are you? 27, 28 right now?
Yeah, 27.
It's amazing. It's amazing. 21 professional wins. So I'm here in Las Vegas, so I don't have like my Brendan Allen fighter card, right, with all of my notes. That's why I'm actually asking you your age. But it's been an incredible career. I think maybe underappreciated up until this point, but I know Kenny wants to get into the fight, so let's talk about it. Rear naked choke submission win over Andre Muniz. It comes in round three, and I don't know, man. I just off the top want to say I felt like you handled everything brilliantly during fight week, everything through the post-fight press conference. But ultimately, I think our listeners want to hear most about the performance. So what were your thoughts on the fight relative to your expectations going in?
First off, thank you. I appreciate it. It was a good experience. Obviously, a lot of things happened as far as like the short notice main event and things like that. But overall, after like being in the fight, obviously, Kenny, especially, you know that it's different being in there versus watching the tape back. And being in there, like, I don't know, it was kind of like he was a little bit longer maybe than I expected. I already expected him to be long, but like I was already given the warning, like the way he holds himself and his stance and things like that make him seem not as long as he is and not as like big. I know he had broad shoulders, long arms, but he was skinny. So being in there, I already had those heads up, but it's even different when you're in there. So he was like, I think the thing he did best, in my opinion, was when he was against the cage, his overhand and his right hook looked the same. Like the way he moved his shoulders, the way he rotated looked the same. Cause ultimately I wanted to put him against the cage and look to time. Like if he threw an overhand, I wanted to time with a block and a hook at the same time. Cause I knew he would drop one hand, and I can never get the read to be able to do that. I was always nervous, like to throw like an uppercut. I saw the uppercut was there, but I was scared of getting hit with the overhand or a hook or something like that, because I couldn't time that. So to me, that was the best thing he did. And other than that, watching the fight, obviously I knew I was getting hit in the fight, but he only ever hit me like here with that little overhook. And maybe it's because my hand was a little bit lower, but it was always off of a little combination. Like he'd throw the left hand and then the hook, or it was something like awkward. Most of the time, he wasn't really flushly hitting me with just the hook by itself. So little things like that, but it's things like that that I can go back to the drawing board, fix, and it makes me want to fight another southpaw, even though all I've been doing is fighting southpaws. But
I hear that a lot. I hear that a lot. Guys want to fight lefties when they get into when they figure some things out. That's interesting.
Well, yeah, because I think if I'm not mistaken, I fought more southpaws in the UFC than like an orthodox guy. Like I know I fought like 2 years worth of just southpaws. And I don't know, I wasn't really thinking too much of striking. Like I knew we were going to strike a majority of the fight just because I didn't think he could take me down. But I thought my hook would be – I would utilize my hook more, and I guess I just didn't. Like I was landing it when I threw, or maybe I was hesitant. But I know I waited on him sometimes, and I shouldn't have. I should have just kept going, because when I did go forward and put my combos on, I was landing. My right hand rocked him in the first, and then it was very like accurate, I think, at the end of the second, I think, or midway through the second, something like that, before the takedown. So it was accurate when I threw it. When I doubled up on my lead hand and threw the right hand, I don't think it missed.
So, Brendan, you know, heading into this fight, obviously the narrative around Muniz is that he's a phenomenal submission artist, right? He was someone you got to watch out for, this and that. Did you have that expectation as well? Like, I got to stay away from his ground game. And then you felt it during the fight. And because you really dominated on the ground, man, like that's where you just kind of ran away with it. Was that something you felt during the fight that you decided to kind of just go for?
So my ego was like, I'm going to go out there and jump guard. And we're going to get it, right? My ego said that. My intelligence was like, all right, let's just keep him more striking because there's no way he beats me on the feet. And again, I was kind of hesitant, and when I let go, it wasn't there. So I obviously there's some things I need to change there and just fix, whether it's mentally or just in there. But ultimately, yeah, when I felt him on the ground in the second, I thought he was gonna immediately go like high guard in his arm bar to triangle series, and he just stayed holding, and I was creating space a little bit at a time, instead of just going crazy and just trying to, you know, ground and pound, because I feel I have the best ground and pound, but I have a certain series that I use, like that I've made for me, and that's my thing. And when I felt him do that, I was like, nah, he set me up for something. But then I felt his strength. I felt how he was moving, and I was like, there's no way. Like, there's no way he has anything for me here. Right. So going into the corner, my coach – Daniel Gracie was like, look, he has nothing for you. I told you before, he's not going to be nothing for you on the ground. So then when we come out for the third, obviously, again, I was a little hesitant striking, not hesitant, but I was just waiting for him for some reason instead of letting go. I mean, maybe it's just because of the fact is like, it's a 4 ounce glove and we weigh probably 200 pounds at that point, you know? So, I don't know, but, so I was waiting on him and he was touching me a little bit, but I knew I was touching him back. But then I was just like, why stay here tit for tat? I want to see really what this ground's like. So I took him down, big takedown. And I felt once I landed inside control, basically, and he just kind of like, I don't know, I don't want to say he quit, but it was kind of like you could feel him breaking in a way, you know, it's that weird thing in the fight that you feel. And once I mounted him, I was like, this ain't going to last. I didn't know the time. Don't get me wrong. I didn't know the time. I didn't know we had 35 seconds left when I tapped him. But I knew I was going to create some damage before the round was over. But, yeah, so to answer your question, yeah, I definitely felt it.
Yeah, that you could definitely see that. Brendan, and what does a fight like this do for your confidence, right? Certain fights, it's going to give you more than others. Right. Is that, I mean, because that, Muniz there. He was on a tremendous win streak, you know, very highly regarded. What does this do for you moving forward, man?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps with the confidence. But for me, this was super important to me personally. This fight was because people like to say, like, I'm a gatekeeper or I don't really show up when the lights are on. And yeah, that was the case, you know, before, like the UFC especially. But now I feel like I've finally overcome that obstacle of like that talk. And even it was in my head for a while, like, fuck, am I going to perform when the lights come back on again when I get that opportunity? And finally, like, I think this one reassured me, like, yeah, it's finally my time. I finally figured it out. I'm finally fighting almost to 100% of my capabilities as far as the guy from the gym and to the cage. So for me, it builds a crap ton of confidence, to be honest with you. And yeah, it's a good feeling. There's not so much more worry of consistency. Like, is that guy who's going to show up per se? So yeah, I'm just super happy about that, to consistently put the guy in the gym, from the gym to the cage, or close to that guy two times in a row. And again, I feel it was all the mental training and the mental work, because the physical and the abilities and the technicalities were always there.
UFC middleweight contender Brendan Allen with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. See, now we can call you a contender. Not that we weren't before, right? But now we can call you a contender with the nice number next to your name. In terms of managing risk and ego in a fight, right? Because again, nobody argues with your skill set and your ability on any given Saturday night to beat any of these guys, you know? But how do you sort of manage that? And would you fight a guy like Chris Curtis differently if you did get that rematch?
Definitely. I would definitely fight him differently, just because of the fact, like, I'm not an excuse kind of guy, right? Like, he beat me. He was the better man that night. Don't get me wrong. Like, and I say this because I know I think he got his feelings hurt a little bit of my post-fight show, even though it wasn't really about him. But, you know, if the shoe fits, then wear it. I like Chris Curtis. I even like Sean Strickland now. Like, right, they come to our table and we talk with them at the PI. So I like those guys, right? As outside of competition. In competition, like, yes, I would fight him again. I couldn't even walk the 2 days before the fight, and that had nothing to do with him. So yeah, I was scared to kick. I couldn't kick, so obviously I would kick more. My style would be a lot different, just because I would have a full training camp for him. I'd be able to break his tape down better and just fully prepare. Like, I was preparing for Brad Tavares for 8 weeks, and then I was preparing for Roman Dolidze for one week. Right. And then I got him on, what, 5 or 6 days? So it's like it was a total 180 kind of scenario. And that's where kind of both of my losses have come from the UFC. They're both short notice guys that were totally different guys from the normal opponent. Right. And just, I guess, for me and what I've learned about myself is I'm a guy that totally prepares mentally and physically. And not a lot of people know this, but I'm the guy that watches the tape majoritively. Like, I watch the tape. I give my coaches, hey, this is what my overall goal is. This is basically my game plan. Granted, my coaches give me different feedback and maybe they might tweak some things. But for me, this has always been great for me, because I'm the only one that truly knows, like, hey, I can exploit this in this guy. And my coaches can say, hey, we think you're going to exploit this guy. We think you can do it here. But I'm the only one that truly has the confidence and the knowledge of exactly what movements I can do. So for me, it's hard to wrap my head around an opponent when I don't have a full time, because it's a roller coaster of emotions for me. I'm confident that I'm not confident, that I'm confident that I'm not. Mm. And mixing watching tape in there, because I'm not a guy that watches it all at once. I'll wait a couple weeks. I'll get into my camp, and then I'll watch one fight. I'll study that. I'll wait a couple of days, watch another fight, study that, and then I'll redo all that. So, like, it's so complicated for me in my head and how I break things down and how I work my way up to that peak. I don't know if it's normal for everyone, to be honest, but for me, it's just that's how it works.
Well, it's interesting, and I know I can see from Kenny's reaction that he's interested. And if Brendan Allen sounds like a budding mixed martial arts analyst, he does have television aspirations, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But still got plenty of fight left in the dog. In terms of this division, right, the four names that were on the tip of your tongue after the fight, and again, masterfully handled on a microphone, number 7, Sean Strickland, number 14, Chris Curtis, 10th-ranked Dricus Duplessis, who fights Derek Brunson coming up this weekend. Jack Hermanson, who's number 9 in the world. I mean, the Hermanson fight, to me, sounds like the one that makes the most sense. You also have Marvin Vettori and the aforementioned Roman Dolidze. So the world is kind of your oyster a little bit. I mean, I think there are a lot of big fights in front of you. To save a hamster's life, best guess as to which one of those names you actually get.
I mean,
you could tell us who you want the most, but I'm curious who ultimately in your heart of hearts you think promotionally Mick Maynard's going to line you up with.
So I think it's timeline as always. Like, I want to fight again in June. So it's just the fact of like, who's, if Jack's willing to wait that long, I think that's the fight that kind of makes the most sense, especially since they've called me short notice once or twice for him. I think twice. One of those, I wasn't training in. I just tore a ligament in my foot. And then the other one, I don't remember what happened. I think it was weight. I couldn't make the weight on like 4 days notice, but, oh, yeah, that's what it was. I couldn't make the weight. It was when Chris Curtis took him against Hermanson in France. So, yeah, right. 2 times.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that one's realistic. Of course, when I start naming, I'll name anyone because I'm just down to fight. Like,
right.
Obviously, I have nothing to hide as well. So, like, I'm trying to slow play a little bit. Like, I got my number. It's 12, even though it should be 11. So, we'll dive into that, actually, because
– please.
Yeah, I think the rankings are bullcrap. Whoever votes on him is retarded. Like, I don't understand how I just beat the number 11 guy, right? Not only did I beat the number 11 guy, I finished him, and I finished him where he's best at. And he was supposedly the dark horse. Nobody wanted to fight him, apparently. But I went in there and fought him. I finished him. You put me at number 12. You put a guy up a number coming off of a loss. And that's okay. He lost. It was short notice. I understand that, even though ultimately it doesn't matter because it's happened to me. But he lost. He kind of got outclassed. He didn't get just beat. He got outclassed on a guy by short notice who was just chilling.
Right.
You know, he wasn't even really training. So, yeah, I don't get that. Plus, he's 4-2 in the UFC. I'm 9-2. And right. I fought way better guys. He's only technically fought one guy that was ranked in Edmund Shahbazyan, who at the time I think was on a 2-fight losing streak or 3.
Right.
So this whole thing just doesn't make sense to me. So that's why I say I'm number 11.
So you say, excuse me, that you want to slow play this a little bit. And that sort of flies in the face of previous conversations that you and I have had a little bit. But right. Then why not, like, the number, right? Like, I know for Bilal Muhammad, your good friend, you know, it's all about sort of the positioning. Like, why not? I'm just curious. Get on a mic. And perhaps it's because you want to slow play it a little bit. But be like, hey, Jared Cannonier, bro, number 3 in the world. You already fought for the goddamn belt. Didn't go particularly well. How about a main event, right? They like to headline you a lot, right? Like, obviously, you're not trying to, like, fast track into the top 3 immediately. It's great for the promotion to have a guy like you that's willing to fight all these guys. But Bilal would tell you not to fight Chris Curtis, number 14 in the world.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's burning off fights on the contract, right? Because the more I burn off, the more money I get paid. And, you know, like my fights, this is my first contract at a 6 fight, and it's not new. Like, I think this was my second fight on the contract. So if I burn another one,
I got
that's
you.
3. I win another one, that's 4. You know, we're kind of looking at bigger things, top 5 at that fight, that at that point, maybe even close to a belt. So that's where money changes tremendously. That's life-changing money at that time. And don't get me wrong, I do well for myself right now, especially for where I'm at. And you'll never hear me complain about money and things like that, because to me, everyone works. If you want more money, fight more and fight better guys, you know. But I'm just trying to slow play it for that reason. But don't get me wrong. And everyone who knows me knows if they call me to fight number 3 in the world, number 2 in the world, that's who you're going to see me fight. I've never said no to a guy, especially if they're good. Obviously, it's nerve-wracking, but I enjoy the challenge.
All right, a couple more things before we let you go. I know you're back home with your family and your daughters. Kenny and I came across a video as we were getting ready to talk to you about your brother James, obviously back in 2013, the accident in the pool. And, you know, you were able to get him out and you started CPR and everything else. But I know that that has been a challenge emotionally and otherwise for you and your family. But, dude, I watched this video of you as such a young man and talking about, you know, you're trying to win a regional belt, and then you say, if I get the UFC contract, I'm going to frame that and give it to my brother and his niece. And it's like, man, look at you now. You know, I know you're not at the pinnacle, but how much have you been able to, I know your daughters are young, but how much have you been able to share your success with James and your niece?
I try to do as much as I can. I give all the, you know, like the clothing stuff that we get, the Venom, and especially my fight jackets. To me, that's like when they ask for a product back, I never give back my fight jacket. Just because I always give that stuff back to my brother. Like, you go over to my brother's house and you'll see him wearing something Venom, you know, it's something Venom. So that means a lot. When I won my first LFA belt, I framed that one, and that's over his bed right now. So he has that, my first LFA belt, and the gloves and pictures from that fight, it's framed over his bed. And then the second one that I won, he ended up doing the same thing back. So I have the second one at my house. And, I think the ultimate reason that I always really, really want to fight in Louisiana is, one, because that's what I claim is home, even though I'm not born here. This is my home, is Louisiana. But the main factor is the fact that my brother can't really travel to my fights, unless maybe Texas he could. But still, it's the fact of, like, you know, his showers and stuff at night. Those showers, my brother's a big boy. He's 6'6" normally, and his chair's big, and yeah, so it's a lot in small spaces, so it's just good for him to be at home. But fighting here in Louisiana, no matter where it is in Louisiana, is just fine for him to be able to come here and be a part of it. And that's kind of something I want to do before I retire. So let alone bringing an event, a UFC event, back to Louisiana, which I know so many people want really bad here. It's more so to have my brother, hopefully I'll do whatever I can to have him and my dad walk out with me and share that experience. And I've always said, win, lose, if that happens, that's something that means more to me than winning a world title, than being number one in the world, the money. To me, that I can retire at any point after that and be happy with where I went in my career.
That's incredible, man. I think you're going to be able to check that box. And honestly, I think, you know, given your status now, you know, you hate to say, man, keep winning fights and you can actually realize that dream. But obviously, they are a little bit inexorably linked. I do think if Hunter and Dana were made aware of that circumstance, you know, given your status now as contender, I think eventually you're going to be able to check that box. But hey, man, congratulations, dude. Get back to your girls. And what's it like going home to your wife after a win like this? You know, it's probably pretty special, I would think.
Well, it's a hell of a time to kind of break that, but we're not really married anymore.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, but it's okay. Like, we're still really good friends. We still talk every day.
All right.
But yeah, it's still nice though, because you get to go back here. I get to see my kids, and my oldest one is kind of at that age where she's like a mama's girl, and she always has been a mama's girl. But she's like, I want my mommy. But my little one, it's all daddy. Like,
isn't that amazing?
Changes and like she's out there right now, and she fusses because she didn't know where I went. And it's a weird time because of my oldest one being like that. But still, like, she'll talk to me on the phone when I'm gone, FaceTime, and be like, I want my daddy. I want my daddy.
Amazing.
You get home and she's like, leave me alone. Don't touch me. You know,
yeah.
So, but it's good, man. It's good to just get back home and see them, no matter if they're little brats or not.
That's right.
It's good to just go out and go do something with them. And my brother's got a nice pool, so we'll go over there later. And
nice, man.
Yeah, it's a good time. Like, that's the best part to me, is coming back home and taking a week or two off and just spending every moment I can with them.
Yeah. There can be a reentry though with the kids. I remember getting the cold shoulder from my son for a 6-month stretch every time I come back from one of these UFC road shows. But it is what it is. All right, Brendan Allen, middleweight contender, number 11 in the world, we'll say. Keep growing the lettuce. Thank you for the time, man. And we look forward to your next fight, main event or otherwise, man. I think it's gonna be a big one. Congrats. Enjoy it with the family. We'll talk to you soon.
Congrats, thank you, man. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks for y'all's time.
Our pleasure, buddy. Thank you. Brendan Allen with us here on the Anik and Florian podcast. So October 11, 2013, his brother James, 6'6", hit his head on the bottom of a pool, and Brendan pulled him out. He was like blue down to his chest. Brendan started CPR. C4, 5, and 6 damage. C5 was pushed into the spine. And, you know, Brendan has gone to great lengths to try to help him. I remember back in the day, Kenny, when we were getting ready to call one of Brendan's early UFC fights, he was talking about making enough money in his fight career to be able to purchase this chair for his brother. And I know, given for you with your brothers and everything that your siblings have meant to you and mean to you, I know that that hit you pretty hard. And it's a pretty emotional thing for Brendan. Good dude right there.
Absolutely, man. And that was an extremely powerful video you sent me. I had no idea. I had no idea about that story. I haven't heard it in interviews or anything like that. But, you know, that can also be a very motivating and powerful force to drive a fighter and to see that. And also, you know, like the level of maturity that Brendan Allen had back then, I think was really impressive. Him talking about the story and what it means to him and how he wants to give back. Just really cool. And Brendan Allen is he's one of the good guys, man. So it's great to see him back then talking about how he wanted to be in the UFC one day, how that was a big dream, and to see him now, you know, coming off that main event win, man, and establishing himself as one of the top middleweights in the world is really cool.
Pretty amazing. We got to get that show in Louisiana somehow, some way for Brendan Allen. So Darren Till is no longer with the UFC. This seems sort of a temporary thing if indeed Darren Till returns to fighting. Here's the quote from the gorilla himself. What's happening, everyone? And obviously this would sound a lot better if it was Darren reading it and not myself. But me, Dana, and Hunter are still cool as fuck. By the way, I gotta talk about the swearing a little bit. I read the comments every now and again, right? And in terms of whoever it is out there that has a 70-year-old that that considers me a role model to whatever degree, I really appreciate that. I am going to try to cuss a little bit less. It is hard for me, right? Because this is the platform on which I really get to be myself. And Kenny knows I grew up in the Northeast, and we have foul mouths, if you want to call it that. You know, I cuss in front of my children and it's up to them to not go to school and cuss. And that's really the way I feel about it. You know, so I am going to try to scale it back a little bit, but I can't promise that this show is not going to be explicit. Right. Like there are plenty of words that you will never hear me say. Right. Brendan Allen actually uttered one of them during that interview. Right. But, you know, F-U-C-K just so happens to be one of my favorite words of all time. And I can't just omit it from my vocabulary overnight.
Right. And it's the same thing. Like if they are watching MMA, you could argue, hey, well, what are you doing having your kids who are very young watching MMA, for example? And there's people, I'm not saying that's the case, but there's people who would have an issue with that. Right. Yeah. Like, hey, kids should be watching. So everyone has a different perspective. Yeah. On how you raise your kids, what do you allow them to see, hear, all that stuff. So, again,
But in terms of cannabis and cussing, I will cut it back because I never necessarily fancied myself a role model to anyone other than my three children, if I'm being honest, you know. And, man, do I love to cuss, I tell you. What's happening, everyone? Me, Dana, and Hunter are still cool as fuck, Till wrote, referencing UFC executives Dana White and Hunter Campbell. I asked UFC to remove me just to sort some other stuff for the foreseeable. They happily agreed to release me out of the contract, which I appreciate. I'm not going anywhere. Got big plans to execute, and I'll be back. So Darren Till, 30 years old, one win since 2018, a split decision win over Kelvin Gastelum. He was 17-0-1 when he fought Tyron Woodley for the title back in 2018. Has fallen on some hard times, and we'll see where the affable and likable Darren Till goes from here.
That was interesting. You know, reading that this morning, I was a little surprised. However, I don't think this is a bad decision. I don't know what's going on in his life personally. Maybe perhaps that is what he's alluding to. Maybe it's another opportunity or whatever. But I think, you know, he's still young. And he still has so much potential. I think that some of his decision making, you know, some of the techniques and the way that he's presenting his style right now, perhaps isn't up to par what I think a lot of us think about Darren Till and what we thought he would be in the sport. So sometimes taking time off, stepping away from the sport, reassessing, doing all these things can really help a fighter or a professional athlete. And I hope that it does the same for Darren Till, who is always entertaining in and out of the cage.
All right, so I'm out here for UFC 285. I have the fighter meetings here on Thursday morning. I'm coming to you early on Wednesday. So this episode probably ingested by many of you on Wednesday. And a huge part of the narrative leading up to this fight is the suggestion made by Ciryl Gane himself that he isn't necessarily a gym rat, training 24/7, 365. And Fernan Lopez, I think, has had some comments about this, that Gon has turned a corner, that maybe he used to be that way. But whatever, there is part of this in Ciryl Gon. Part of this existed in Ciryl Gon at some point in his mixed martial arts career. So I'm watching UFC Embedded, and I have this quote from John Jones, Kenny. And he says, Ciryl Gon is just here right now. His words let me know he doesn't believe he'll be here for a long time, and I'm not losing to a guy like that. And John Jones has been very frontal when it comes to talking about Ciryl Gon's training, right? And how clean the gym room looks, right? How clean his clothes look, maybe how relatively small his wrestling training partners look. So I'm going to bring that quote to Ciryl Gon in the fighter meeting, and I'm curious what he's going to say about it. Do you have anything for us on what is obviously the lead narrative right now for the undisputed UFC heavyweight title fight coming up this week?
Oh, man, I am so glad you brought this up, and I am so glad that I watched those embeddeds last night as I was, surfing YouTube. First of all, brilliant stuff from John Jones.
Right. I mean,
his ability to analyze and look into things and also poke at his opponent, I think is just amazing stuff. I also think that I saw a certain venom and a certain fire within John Jones that I haven't seen in a very long time. The big problem with this is, if you are doing that, let's say you're only training when you have fights, or maybe you're not training all the time. It says a couple things. Either you're a phenomenal athlete, that's one, or number two, that you can pick things up that quickly, right? Because you're such an athlete. Or number two, that maybe your heart isn't in it as much as you think it is. John Jones, in contrast, I think over the last few years has matured to the point where he was training whether he had a fight or not. He is trying to get better, and hearing the words come out of his mouth saying that I owe it to everyone else who can't do this, who doesn't have the talent that I have, was great to hear, because I think a lot of people feel that way. So, again, I think and I hope that this is a different John Jones. And if so, I think it's going to be a phenomenal fight. But either way, Gon is dangerous. But hearing that out of Jones, man, was awesome. I got so fired up.
Oh,
I had chills listening to this. I can't wait for this weekend's card, dude. It's sick.
I'm telling you, I'm going to shake John Jones's hand and be as starstruck as ever. There's just about him as professional athlete. And speaking of guys, and this is a dear friend of the program, but a guy who I still get a little bit starstruck around, the most decorated finisher in UFC bantamweight history, the number 4 ranked contender, Marlon Chito Vera. Good morning, my friend. We appreciate your time very much, sir.
Anytime, guys. How are you guys?
Good.
Oh, we're better now, man. You're looking very handsome. So what are we doing with the hair for Saturday, March 25th? Are we growing out the lettuce right now or what?
I don't know, man. I'm a very last minute person in terms of the way I look. So I could either get a fade on 5 week, I could shave it the night before, or I could just go the way I wake up today before sparring. So I just don't know. I really go by feeling. Sometimes, believe it or not, I open my IG and I see you getting a fresh shape. I say, I'm doing it today. I go like that. John's entering 5 weeks and he have a fade. I fuck with. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get that. I'm very easy going. I'm like, monkey see, monkey do. I don't know.
Well,
I just keep my eyes open.
Well, we look forward to whatever.
I let it grow too.
Well, we look forward to whatever the look is. And it seems like there was a great motivation from the UFC to get this fight in front of a crowd, right? This main event between you and Corey Sandhagen, Saturday, March 25th, if you don't know, San Antonio, Texas, AT&T Center, capacity crowd, probably 22,000-25,000. Like, when this main event was announced, it was met with such fan enthusiasm, but it immediately was also met with this noise like these guys can't be competing at the UFC Apex. So how did that all go down with sort of the 5 week delay? And what were your thoughts on all of that?
To me, I can care less where I'm fighting, right? You know,
right.
If the paycheck is right, if the opponent's going to get my title shot, I can fight in my garage in the street. So when they call me 2 weeks out, which is it's pretty fucked up, right? But it is what it is, right? You got to handle it at the end of the day. If you're going to win the 18, you're going to win the 25th. You're going to lose, it's going to be either way. So to me, I'm not, I don't get sensible in a way like I will freak out or stress. I'm like, you know what? You know, I just ask for a little motivation and here we are. You know, we change the date and, you know, more time, more reps. And, you know, I was ready to fight 18. I'm not going to lie about it. For a minute, I was like, can we just keep the date? And then they told me like, hey, this is like, I kind of felt the need that the move, right? So why say fuck you when I can give them what they want and then later get what I want? So, you know, just play the game. And when you're ready, you're ready. It doesn't really matter the day, the arena, who's watching. I'm just ready to go.
Cheeto, maybe I haven't been paying attention, but I feel like, you know, you're one of the most real fighters out there. Like, you're not afraid to say what's on your mind. But I do feel like there was a shift at a certain point where you're like, I'm just going to say whatever I want and do whatever I want. And, you know, like, when did that shift happen and why did it happen, you think?
I feel I always had this attitude of a go-getter, of a guy that, you know, use, you know, a straight shooter. But, you know, at some point, I will say this because my experience was very small at the beginning, like fighting in South America. I didn't really fight in big shows. Didn't really fight, you know, I fought a bunch of guys from Brazil, a bunch of guys from around the world, but I never get that big competition, never get to build a record, kind of like get amateur fights. So I made it to the UFC with 6-1, right? So my first 10 fights, I was on fear. I'm going to get fired. I'm going to get caught. Because I was so small that I, you know, I keep it real. I always keep it real. Sure. I mean, back then I was like, I'm so small that I lose a fight by decision, I might get caught. So yeah. You just don't know what's going to happen at that level because, you know, you're swimming in a pool that there's like 40 guys trying to break it to the top 30. And I wasn't even able to break it at the beginning, but going back to what you asked is because, you know, you live with fear. You're like, you know, fuck, if I say this, they might don't like this. If I say fuck you, they might don't like this. If I go, they might, you know, you just don't have the experience. And little by little, I started kind of like telling myself, like, you know what? You're not a kid anymore. You know, I'm not the guy that makes his UFC debut at 21 year old and it's cute and everybody feels sorry for you because you're fighting for your daughter. And at one point I was just, you know what? Fuck the world. I don't owe nothing to nobody. I'm going to be myself, carry myself. And, you know, just I work too hard to kind of like be shy. So I went, you know what? Fuck everybody. I'm gonna love my people, work for my people. And whoever is with me, cool. Whoever is against me, cool too. So I'm just going to go forward. And all that, the moment I started working with Perillo, he really bugged me to the next level, mentally, physically. In my career, he's the best thing that probably ever happened to me.
Yeah. I love it, man. I could see it. I wanted to ask you one more thing, man. Was there a fight that you go back or an experience that you had over the course of your UFC career that changed you, that kind of made you feel like, hey, I could be one of the best bantamweights in the world. I could be a champion in this division. Was there a fight that kind of changed that?
The Jose Aldo fight really gave me nightmares for months. I would wake up in the middle of the night pissed off at myself, just saying like, just really kind of like sad, upset, kind of like just bummed about it because, you know, from the TV, it seems like the guy took my bag and hold me, right? But like, I was in there, like I was in the cage with the guy and I saw how broken he was at the end of the second round. He was hurt. And in the third round, I came too cocky, too quick, too fast. And he just took advantage of my mistake because in that third round, I would literally, Perillo was telling me like, hey, stay calm, keep doing your thing, just little by little, because he saw me how pumped I was and just like, fuck, man, I don't need anything. I'm gonna kill this guy. And I just went, anybody who can go and watch it back, I literally went and just throw a haymaker. We spin around, he took my bag, and when I could explode and get out of the position, I was just like, oh, I'm gonna fucking kill this guy. I'm gonna get out of here. Because I felt his energy. He was drained, but that doesn't mean they can fight back. So that lesson was the best thing that ever happened to me, because that happened, and that was literally the fight that would put me in the top 10 and would put me in the position I was maybe after the phone fight. By losing that fight, I literally went back, fully back to the ladder. They give me a guy outside the top 15, which was a rematch with David Grant. They literally went, hey, dude, you missed your opportunity. Fuck you. Now go and do it again. And that was really what happened. And I was pissed and I was mad, but at myself. I never blame it on a coach, on a person, on a family member, like any. I you see today, everybody have an excuse for everything. Oh, my mom didn't treat me well and I felt bad on FICOM. Oh, my wife left me. Oh, my uncle didn't talk to me. I like to take things by the handle and just carry everything by me. I lost that fight on myself. I make the mistakes. Now let's make the adjustments. And the adjustment was just train harder. Don't cry like a little bitch and let it go. Really, I don't hold to that fight. I didn't lose to him and started talking shit to him for 3 months. I just let it go. I was like, cool, dude, you beat me. If we have to fight again, I swear to God, I'm going to kill you. But that's going to happen. So just let it go.
UFC bantamweight contender Marlon Chito Vera with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. So you're very good at mentally sort of just focusing on the things that you can control. But when we speak, it seems like I'm in more of a rush for you to fight for the title than you are, right? And part of that's because you're not worried about the things that maybe you can't control. You talk about maybe the Jose Aldo fight getting away, the Song Yadong fight in 2020 that you should have won. You know, who knows? You might have already fought for the title by now. So do you feel like there's any blessing within all of this that now at 30 years old, you're on the cusp, you're one win away, and now maybe it's happening at a better time given the alignment with Perillo and everything else?
I have this conversation with Perillo many times, Ryan. You know, the Sonya don't fight, that's the one that I don't really kind of like bring it too much. It's just because how the entire world went against that, and went like, hey, fuck the guy you won, fuck the UFC you won. And I was just like, yeah, I know that, cool. It's not a UFC problem. It's not my opponent problem. It's just, it was bad judgment. Who knows, right? I can get conspiracy theory right now, but who knows, right? I just want to believe the judges fucked up that night. Yeah, that's true. I could be fighting for the belt already, but also when all those two fights happened, I wasn't full-time with Perillo. I hadn't built this relationship with him. And I just want to believe I wasn't ready for handle bigger stage. You know, people can say whatever they want. You can only know once you get there. And not many people get there. You know, the people that hold belts, you can only count them with a pair of hands. So it's not like everybody's a champion. Might as well, if I'm going to get there with all my guns ready to go. And I feel like now is the moment. And, you know, and as is now, if you ask me about the belt, I don't give a fuck about the belt.
Right, right.
The belt. I'm fighting Corey Sandhagen. The guy does not have the belt. But I got to go through that guy to get there. So I just feel I put all my energy into fucking drilling a hole through his face. And then I'm sure the UFC will give me a belt. And if they fail, I just have to do the same thing to another guy.
I think I get frustrated at times as your fan because you have everything, right? I think you're the total package, right? You move all the needles, right? Check all the proverbial boxes. Oh, and by the way, most decorated finisher in UFC bantamweight history. I know better, though, than to ask you about Henry Cejudo cutting the line, because I know largely you don't give a shit. Let me ask you this. In terms of your public approval rating, right? Kenny talks about how real and relatable you are. I know everybody has haters, every public figure does, but I'd imagine there's much more love for you out there than hate, is there not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I believe that's because the way I carry myself, you know, people, you really touch people's hearts, either they like you or they don't, if you just tell the truth, right? If you keep it pretty honest, even if they might didn't like it at the beginning because they're more of a fan of your opponent of somebody else, they will realize. Because I know myself, if I, let's see, a former opponent or somebody I don't like, and they say the right thing or they say something that impacts me, even if I'm like, fuck that guy, I want to kick his ass, I'm like, you know what? What you just say, I like it. I respect that as a man. And I feel that's what's going to give me more longevity on people's minds. It's going to give me more life on people's heart, just because people will forget about who you beat. Like, let's just go a couple of years ago. Who thinks about Anderson Silva? Nobody thinks about Anderson Silva. I do because I'm a big MMA fan. But if you go and see how many lives he impact, who he got to his heart, it's more probably more. I don't know him personally, but what I'm trying to say is, like, people forget what happened on Saturday night. It's what you do outside the cage.
Yeah.
How you carry yourself. It's going to last longer. It's going to give you more at the end, right? Bells will come and go. Money will come and go. But the fact that everybody fuck with you and all the doors are open, you're going to be good the rest of your life.
Yeah. I want to be respectful of your time. I have a few quick questions on the way out. How often do you go back to Ecuador? And when was the last time you went? And do you have any future plans to get back there?
I was supposed to go back last year because my visa was my green card. I haven't got my green card yet. I was able to go back. Now the green card is approved. Now I have like a little credential that I can go anywhere. So I will probably go after this fight. Last time I went was after the fun fight, and it was a really nice trip. Like, I never see that much love in my life. It was it was crazy. I realized, like, well, okay, now I figured it out. Next time I come here, I can't come by myself. Like, I was with my coach, with my friends, with two of my best friends that they filmed for me, but I need like real big guys to help me around the town.
Now. It's amazing, man.
I was a stalker, but I was like, I couldn't believe I become that. I was amazed by it.
I was in Orlando last week, and we had an Uber driver who was from Ecuador, and he was saying how we have Marlon Chito Vera now, so we're very excited. And he just kept talking about you, man. It was cool. It was cool.
It's great. It's crazy to go from a guy that was getting in trouble every week when I was a kid, going to Yale for a street fight, and now they love me. It's crazy to me to realize that. And to me, when you really appreciate that, it just keep coming more and more to you. So that's one thing I always talk to coaches is everybody gets to a certain point in life, but it's how you handle it, right? And then if you handle it right, you just keep getting it more and more and more. So I'm just really excited about my near future because I see really, really good things coming my way.
All right, two more quick ones. Fact or fiction, Chito Vera will take a fight at featherweight before his UFC career is over.
Oh, 100%.
Okay. And then I just want to ask you about the Spanish television commentary. I know I hope someday we can actually do commentary in English, at least join us for a few fights. But to what degree has that helped you in terms of your fighting career, either watching film or preparing? Because a lot of fighters lean heavily into that. They say it helps a lot. Has that helped you in your fighting career?
Honestly, I don't know for sure if that make me a better fighter, but I just really, really enjoy do commentary. Like, it's for me, doing commentary is like going to surf. Even if I'm watching a fight, takes my mind away from me being a fighter and I'm doing something cool outside the box. And I'm literally, what I like the most is being in there and feel the energy life, because you can see how the momentum of the fight can shift literally from one punch to another. You can be kicking somebody's ass and then there's just one kick and your opponent goes like, oh, fuck, that hurt me. And they become a shield of themselves and they let it go. That just helped me to feel this, like, everybody gets hurt. That's
a different perspective, right? Being there, but watching someone else. Yeah.
It's almost like you are in there getting repetitions mentally for that. So I'm like,
totally, man.
We can lose. Okay. We all can lose. But some people don't think like that. Some people feel that they're untouchable.
Yeah.
No, untouchable. Yeah. Nobody. You clip somebody in the face, you bring some energy, and they will go like, you know what? I don't want to do that. And they will give up.
Saturday, March 25th. That's the man on the marquee, Marlon Chito Vera against Corey Sanhagen, San Antonio, Texas. Appreciate your time, my man, sincerely. And you know you're always going to have big fans in us, and we look forward to seeing the title fight thereafter, but we look forward to watching March 25, brother.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you both, and thanks for having me.
Much love, brother. There he is. Marlon Chito Vera with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. And y'all know I'm a UFC guy through and through. Kind of wish actually I could bet on the fights, but I can't. So for me, a few things more exciting right now recreationally than having NBA action on the board. And you can be a part of it this weekend with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official betting partner of the NBA. Tap into all of the excitement with one click of a button. And new customers right now can place $5 on any pregame moneyline bet. Get $150 in bonus bets if your team wins. Also, for a limited time, all customers can score a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. You go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, opt in, place a same-game parlay on any NBA game, and if it doesn't hit, you get a bonus bet back. Really a risk-free proposition. And Wednesday night, here's what I'm on. Big payout, plus 1,100, so don't grill me in the comments, right? But Cavaliers at the Celtics, plus 1,100. You need all three legs to come in. Cavs plus 4.5. I think it's going to be a close game. And then over 30 points, 5 assists, and 5 rebounds for Donovan Mitchell. Of course, if the hardwood is not your thing, not a problem. Plenty of ways for you to get involved with UFC 285 coming up this weekend. So download the app now. Sign up with the code AFPOD. New customers can place $5 on any pregame moneyline bet and get $150 in bonus bets if your team wins. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code AFPOD. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. All right, great stuff today from Brendan Allen and just there from Marlon Chito Vera. What an absolute stud. Sliding into Ken Flo's DMs back in the day, trying to figure out how to loosen up those elbows. What a stud, huh?
Dude, it's awesome. Oh, first of all, just awesome talking to those two gentlemen. Chito's the man, dude. He really is. He's a fighter, but he's also a martial artist. And you see the improvements that he's made, man, over the course of his career. It's crazy seeing him really come out in every way, shape, or form. You know, he's very outspoken. Love watching him fight. That fight against Sanhagen is just gold, dude. Those are two of the best right now. Love watching those guys. Insane amount of skill going at it that night, and can't wait. But this weekend, man, nuts.
Yeah, and it is a title eliminator between Marlon Vera and Corey Sanhagen. Now, Henry Cejudo, as a two-division champion, is going to get opportunities, right? And he's getting an opportunity to cut the line here. Yeah. You know, I think you can argue Aljamain Sterling is the worst matchup for Sean O'Malley. And if you think O'Malley makes you the most money as champion, you know, a lot of people feel like the Aljo fight would be better for him to avoid than the Cejudo fight, depending on where you fall on that. Who knows? But I've talked to Jason House. Marlon Chito Vera beats Corey Sanhagen. He's going to sit down and wait for his championship opportunity. And that's what you got to do. So we will see how it all plays out. But a big one coming up, needless to say, on March 25th. All right. Last thing before we get you out of here, Ken Flo. I know you got PFL Challenger Series coming up this weekend in Orlando, Florida. By the way, I really enjoy your female ring announcer. What's her name?
Lillian Garcia.
Out fucking standing.
She's not with us anymore.
I say Brendan out.
I know. Hey, you're 2 for 2, dude.
You got a guy ring announcer?
We're not sure yet.
Hey, Brendan Allen, welcome home to your wife. He's like, yeah. Actually, we're not together. I'm like, hey, Lillian's awesome. Well, actually, she's not with PFL anymore. Awesome. Great. All right. Last thought, UFC 285, before I let you go. So when I suggest to people that I think that Alexa Grasso has a chance this weekend and she is live to whatever degree as underdog, I'm getting some strange looks. And it seems to me like the prevailing wisdom is that if Valentina wins or loses, I should say, to any fighter, it's going to be that maybe she gets a little bit overwhelmed on the ground. We've heard Aaron Blanchfield talk about how maybe her approach on the ground is a little bit minimalistic or simple. How do you handicap Alexa Grasso's chances? Because I don't know, maybe I got rose-colored glasses, but I think we might get a competitive co-main event this week.
You know, I alluded to it a little bit on our last podcast, and the more I was thinking about it, the more I thought that Grasso legitimately has a chance. I still do. Listen, there is no fighter out there that is perfect, okay? Shevchenko has her vulnerabilities. There are ways to beat her. Does Grasso possess the skills to do it? Yeah, I think she does in a lot of ways. You know, Shevchenko's not the most technical grappler or most, you know, sophisticated grappler in the world, and Grasso has been improving in that regard a lot. I also think Grasso's hands are something to be aware of. You can't sleep on those at all. She's very fast. She knows how to put together combinations. She's getting much better angles right now. And I think, again, the improvements she's made as a grappler is significant. I think where Shevchenko has a huge, you know, advantages in the experience, right? The experience in those 5-round fights. But Grasso has skills to really pose a problem for Shevchenko. I do believe that.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. UFC 285 beckons Saturday night live on pay-per-view. Thank you all for checking out the show this week, audio, video, or otherwise. Don't forget, KennyFlorianMartialArts.com is live. If you like grappling, if you like jiu-jitsu, I strongly recommend clicking on that site. AnnickFlorianPodcast.com for all of your show merchandise needs. We also have special designs, One More Sleep for March 4th. And UFC 285 as the GOAT returns. I'm not doing a great job on the video side, but the GOAT-themed One More Sleep merchandise is now live, millions.co, if you want to get in on that. And we will be back with you actually probably midday Monday with a full recap of UFC 285. Thank you to our wonderful guests today, Brendan Allen, Marlon Chito Vera. Our producer is Cody Merrill. For Ken Flom, I'm John Anik, signing off from Vegas. See you Saturday night live on Pay-Per-View Yoda.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.